You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. I'm Emily Means, filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. The Summit County Council meets Wednesday to discuss a county audit, Park City's annexation policy plan proposal, and more. So joining us with a preview is Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Emily.
Uh-oh, hold on a second. I think I got you on the wrong mic.
Good morning, Emily.
There we go. There we go. Great to have you in, Tom. First up on the agenda, the County Council will review what I assume is the annual audit of the county and its financial practices. Can you give us a sneak preview?
Sure. Well, I mean, it is. It's the annual independent audit. We contract with a firm each year to do that. They come in and they look at our general ledger. They look at our budget. They look at all of the different things that and places where funds that we have, both revenue and expenditures, make determinations based on sampling of expenditures and revenues on the financial health of the county. And so far, things are going extremely well. As with any audit, there's going to be. I haven't seen the management letter yet. We're gonna review that today, but there's always things to improve. So I'm expecting that we'll have some of those things in this management letter.
What sort of things usually turn up in this process?
So it could be little things perhaps not meeting projected fund balances or budgeted fund balances, and then the result of that is asking the question, okay, why didn't you meet that? And it could be that the council chose to make an expenditure during the year, whether there was an opportunity to buy some property or some other thing that comes up like that, or that revenues didn't meet the expected. So those are some of the big things. And then we want to see also the result of how we're expending money. So, for instance, we've been doing a lot of work around our solid waste facilities in the last few years and drawing down some fund balances to do that. And so it's a good time to review some of those larger projects and their impacts on the revenue that you have to see how that is going to project into the future.
I guess we'll get more details on that after.
Absolutely, and the document will actually be posted to the agenda today.
Great.
And available to the public. So.
Well, next up on the agenda, Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt will present Park City's proposal to modify its annexation declaration boundary, and we're going to talk about that with Bruce Erickson as well. But Park City is looking to include Quinns Junction and Round Valley areas, which are unincorporated land within Summit County, as well as Bonanza Flat, which is in Wasatch County, in their annexation policy plan. And it seems like the city and county have been working really closely on this recently. So does the county have any concerns about what they're seeing in the plan?
I don't know that we have any large concerns at this point. We've been communicating with each other as Park City has been contemplating this. Of course, this has... it's all going on at the same time that we're talking about Hideout and their annexation plans and their needs to do certain things. Mida, Wasatch County, all of these things are in the mix. But a lot of what Park City is projecting, whether it be Bonanza Flat or Round Valley, kind of follow what some decisions that have already been made and already make sense. The annexation out beyond to the east of the 40 U.S. 40 corridor is probably the biggest departure from past policy. But a lot of that property is already owned by the city of Park City as open space, and as well, there's property out there that we seem to have agreement on what future development looks like. So I'm sure that's going to be a point of discussion for the council today and between staff and the council to see if there are any concerns.
So what's the county's role, maybe kind of in more general terms, when a municipality moves to include land in its annexation expansion boundaries? Because it seems like mostly a move on the part of the city.
Yeah,
the
I mean, it's really a communication by the city to the unincorporated county about what it's thinking about doing and what it would like to do in order to forward its plans in the future, because it's all part of an amendment to their general plan. I think the role is for the county is really to pay attention. Certainly we have general plans that project different levels of development in some of those areas, and we want to make sure that we have that conversation with those municipalities so that if there is going to be development that's different from the county's general plan, we understand why and how that is going to affect the unincorporated county that will be adjacent. In the case of Park City, it's a difficult lift for a county, for a city and a county within that county boundary. If the property owners do desire to annex in, there's a lot of reasons why a county can't refuse that, but sometimes there's revenue equities that need to be made along the way. It's a little different for like Hideout that's in Wasatch County if they're trying to annex land within Summit County across a county border. It's a totally different deal just by state law.
Right. And I'm hoping we can get into that just a little bit, as you can guess. But last week I attended the Hideout Town Council meeting, and County Council Member Chris Robinson actually spoke during public input on the town's proposed annexation policy plan. And there's still Summit County land included in Hideout's annexation policy plan in their expansion boundaries. Even though the county has apparently explicitly requested that it be removed from Hideout's plan. So what's your sense of why it remains there?
Well, I mean, it's not against any rules, regulations, laws for a town to put in their declaration boundary lands that are in another county. So they're perfectly within their right to do that. Now, when a property owner that is in another county comes in to apply to Hideout, in this case, for annexation, they have to realize that Summit County will be involved and has to authorize that if that's going to go forward. There's a lot of different reasons why a property owner might want to deal with that municipality versus the county. Some of those is ease of development. Some of those might be, a desire to develop differently than what the county's general plan is. But it does set up a little bit of tension that could happen in the future. And that's one of the reasons why we want to be talking closely with Hideout and with Wasatch County. So if those tensions do come to fruition through land use applications, that we can deal with those in a logical manner.
You mentioned, I think a couple weeks ago when you were on the show with Leslie, that Summit County kind of has veto power on this if Hideout chooses to move forward with an annexation action. Is that always the case? I was, just kind of going through state law, annexation law. There are lots of details in there. If you have enough landowners interested in being annexed into Hideout, does that balance out in any way?
Well, I think I'm gonna leave the legal side of that to the county attorney's office because I am not an expert in that. But my understanding is that we have to be involved, and the county would have to approve that. And there's a lot of reasons why that could happen. If the proposed development follows the county's zoning that is already applied to that property. There may be a reason for the county to agree with that. If different kinds of revenue sharing are agreed to, I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities. And I think the point is that the process of annexation slows the governments down enough to ask the questions and really talk to each other about what those possibilities are and decide whether it's going to be confrontational and other means are going to have to be made, or whether it's agreeable.
Let's get out of the weeds a little
sure.
bit. The council will also consider amendments to the Eastern Summit County Water Conservancy District, which is essentially the sewer district.
Mm-hmm.
The district was set up in 2008. What are its duties?
Well, I mean, eventually it's there in order to deal with larger developments that come into the eastern side of the county and want to develop at densities that would not be supported by septic systems. So it was set up when the Indian Hollow development was approved in the Democrat Alley area of South Summit. Because MPDs and village overlays are now part of the Eastern Code, we're starting to see some of those applications come through. So we really are going through a deliberate process, and the council is going through a deliberate process of setting up and really activating this district so it's ready when these first developments come through. And an MPD applies to any development that's four lots or more in the eastern side of the county. And as you can imagine, there's some pressures to develop that are coming that will cause some of these things to happen.
So these amendments to the district will kind of help set them on this track to support these.
Yeah, we're trying to do a couple of different things in this change that Helen Strawn has put in front of the council is, first of all, the health department and the district right now kind of do the same thing under the district rules, and we're trying to streamline that so that we're not duplicating administrative steps. The other thing that as we were bringing this in front of the council earlier this year is that the council wanted to watch an application go through the process so that they made sure they got the ordinance right. And so that's another thing that we're doing.
The council will also consider an appeal from the developers of the Silver Creek Village project. And this, the background on this appeal was like more than 6,000 pages long.
Yeah, I was trying to download it this morning, and instead I just called Pat Butt.
Maybe we should phone him in. But can you kind of explain what the developers are appealing here?
Yeah, very simply, there is a approximately 5-acre parcel within the Silver Creek Village development that is deemed for civic use. The developer has put it in an application to allow that use to be a private private facility that could be a private event facility. And the community development director decided that that is not a civic use. So the developer is appealing that decision.
Why? So Rick Bruff kind of explained this to me as a reception center.
Yeah, I mean, it could be used as a reception center, any type of meeting type of facility. The problem is that civic in the community development director's decision does not imply profit. And so a for-profit business would not fall under that civic use in his determination.
Okay, Tom, before I let you go, I have one more question for you,
sure.
A special bonus question. KPCW is working on some reporting around workforce housing needs in Summit County and the Park City area. Do you have any updates for us on the workforce housing project in the Canyons area?
Yeah, sure. I also want to caveat that Brian Mattesy from the CVMA is probably the best person to talk to about that. But they so far have, with Columbia Pacific, who is the contracted group that is forwarding that development, they've met all their deadlines that's set out in the revised development agreement to meet that housing and to start getting it under construction next year. As we've been watching that progress, they've been communicating very directly with us to make sure that we understand they're meeting their deadlines. We're going to see that go vertical next year, and that is still the expectation.
Okay. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, I'm going to have to let you go. Thanks so much for
coming in.
The Park City Planning Commission will hold its first public meeting as required by state law on the city's proposed annexation policy plan. Here with a preview is Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson.
Hi, good Bruce. Morning, Emily.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So before we get into annexation, which looks like a pretty big item on Wednesday's agenda, let's talk about the first item, which is a continuation of the Woodside Park Phase 2 remand back to the Planning Commission from the Board of Adjustment. Why is staff asking for a continuation?
Well, a couple things, but the main reason is, and this may work for your listening public or not, but it normally takes 3 or 4 weeks to go through the staff report and move it through every department in the city and make sure that it's absolutely perfect before it gets to the Planning Commission. And there's some technical details that need to be worked out in the presentation before we bring it to the Planning Commission. So we're working through some of the presentation issues and how we want to present the case for the setbacks or not the case for the setbacks, depending on the appeal. So highly technical, just making sure all the departments are happy at this point.
So when I've spoken with Housing Manager Jason Glidden and Community Development Director Ann Laurent, they both said that staff is kind of like sticking to their guns on the need for the setback reduction. They just need to demonstrate that more clearly. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it is. The housing and planning and everybody needs to make sure that we're responding to the way the Land Management Code language is specifically. You know, we can drift off into different discussions about what's a better site plan. Does this site plan work better or not? What are the ramifications? But I think everybody's trying to make sure that we're sticking to the Land Management Code as carefully as we can.
When can we expect it to come back to the commission?
With any luck, I would expect it to be back on the September 11th agenda.
Okay. We'll look for it there.
Yep.
Last time we talked, you said the city's annexation policy hasn't been aggressive in the past because of concerns about sprawl. And now we're launching into updating the city's annexation policy plan. So what approach is the city taking now?
Well, we're taking roughly the same approach in that we're looking for infill and redevelopment and not sprawling out across the neighborhoods. On the other hand, we do own some property that we want to make sure is in our city boundaries so that our land use decisions are our land use decisions. So on the north end in Round Valley, we own several hundred acres that need to be brought into the city. The Clark Ranch is a better part of several hundred acres on the east and west side of 40 in Summit County. And then we have development restrictions on the United Park City Mines land in Richardson Flat. And so our policy is not aggressive, but it is designed to make sure that we can manage our destiny moving forward. And we started this discussion in 2017. We had some conversations about conservation easements. That was probably a little too aggressive in that would restrict the use of the land into the future unless future city councils decided to amend the conservation agreement. Conservation agreements are held by third parties, which means the third party would have to agree to the change as well.
Right.
And that's probably too rigorous at this point in our development scenarios to make that commitment.
So since Park City owns all this land anyway, what changes if we annex it?
One is it comes under our land use authority. So if the city council makes a decision that they want to use something for housing, for example, or they wanted to meet one of our energy goals, or they wanted to meet one of our transit goals, it would be under our jurisdiction to do that and not another governmental agency.
Staff isn't recommending any land use decisions like you just mentioned, though Quinns Junction and Round Valley are zoned as low density. Could you foresee that changing? I know that we have a great need for affordable housing.
Not in the short term. And that zoning is actually county zoning under the terms of the Quinns Junction planning principles. We're having the conversation about additional housing in Richardson Flat, but I think the crux of that conversation is the delivery of needed services, not just housing. If everybody has to drive into town to go to the grocery store, we don't do a very good job of delivering the neighborhood. If everybody has to come to town to go to school, or go to some other service, we're probably not serving the residents well. And that's the basic definition of sprawl, is you drive housing into locations where there are no services.
You know, we were just speaking with Tom Fisher from Summit County about how tricky it can be to annex land that's outside of the county that the municipality is in. And we're kind of seeing this with Hideout. But Bonanza Flat is Park City owned, and it's outside Summit County. It's in Wasatch County. Mm-hmm. What have the city's conversations with Wasatch County been like around this?
So, you know, at a planning level, both jurisdictions are generally agreed that this is a good idea, that the city should control the outcome. I think the issues that need to be addressed at the elected official level are how law enforcement is actually going to work in that location, how fire protection and emergency services are going to work in that location. And I think we're trying to get a handle on how Wasatch County views its road system, both through Bonanza Flat and on the Brighton Estates properties. So those are the three things that we need to have conversations with the county about.
Bruce, you spoke at Hideout's town council meeting last week, just before County Councilmember Chris Robinson did. You mentioned that while Hideout did remove a portion of the Quinns Junction area from its plan, it left some parcels in that Park City is actually pretty fond of. So maybe you can kind of differentiate the area for
us. Sure. So Hideout, at the original discussions about 6 weeks ago, Hideout had included some of our owned lands, including the Clark Ranch. And so they were good enough to take the Clark Ranch out of their annexation policy, and it would be covered under our policy directly. They also removed the EPA mine reclamation site, which is called Operating Unit 1, so that they would not have sort of an oversight, you know, picking up old mine remnants in there. But they left the United Park City Mines lands in their annexation policy, and those lands have a development restriction on them under the Flagstaff annexation. So and that's about 560-odd acres that we've restricted from development under the annexation agreement with Flagstaff. And we generally feel like we need to manage those lands. You know, obviously our concerns have to do with additional intersections on 248. If we do too much signalization out there or too many intersections, that really affects our ability to deliver transit, for example, because it'll slow transit times down. It affects some of our other traffic issues that we're trying to face and how 248 operates in the future. You know, we have some long-range transportation issues with Summit County out at Kimball Junction. If we were to do heavy retail somewhere in Richardson Flat, that would move that problem around a little bit. And Summit County is pretty clear. Their general plan does not really contemplate development outside the designated town centers, and we support that position strongly.
So something Hideout Town Council member Kurt Shadle kind of addressed in his comments around annexation is that if Hideout includes these areas and expands their annexation boundary map, they feel like they become part of the conversation, part of the regional planning conversation. How is Park City kind of keeping Hideout in mind? And, you know, I'm not asking you to speak for Summit or Wasatch County either, but when we're looking at this greater vision for this area?
I think that's really a good question. And the answer is, if nothing else, Hideout has come to the table and said, we want to be part of the regional team. We may not like some things on how Park City is developing, or we may not like A, B, and C, but I think regional trails are a critical mission. I think regional transportation is a critical mission. Recreation around Jordan L is critical. If we were to look into the future, you could see a pretty huge interconnected set of trails and activities with Hideout, with Summit County, with Wasatch, with the Mida development on the west side of the lake. We could have a pretty important regional recreation development that we couldn't do unless we were coordinating with Hideout.
The last item on the Planning Commission's agenda is the Twisted Branch Road proposal. And Bruce, I think what I know most about this is that this item has been continued at every Planning Commission or City Council meeting I've been to. So we're finally getting a hearing on this, it seems. What is the Planning Commission considering here?
Okay, so Twisted Branch Road is is pretty apropos named. This is a very complicated planning decision. Twisted Branch is a private road that was installed by the developer in order to access the lots at the Red Cloud subdivision as part of the Flagstaff development. It runs roughly, and I won't say parallel, but roughly in about the same alignment as the current State Road 224. And so we're trying to figure out how to maintain what the development agreement says, which is Twisted Branch Road is not to provide access to Guardsman Pass. And should UDOT abandon 224, then the city would want to have some rights to Twisted Branch Road so we can control development. The applicant has requested the Planning Commission hear this item. We were generally considering continuing it again as the attorneys kind of work through the final set of languages. This is a very complicated land use case and affects Bonanza Flat. It affects Guardsman Road. It affects potential developments on Jordan L side of the lake because of the way the property ownerships work on that side in Wasatch County. It affects Wasatch County's road system. So there's a lot of technical background moving parts. And like I say, the applicant requested that we hear this. I don't expect the Planning Commission to take any action, and the staff's going to recommend another continuance.
So this is the kind of thing that we're talking about where we're looking at regional planning. Is Wasatch County involved in all of this and Summit County? And
well, I think we're trying to coordinate with Wasatch County's general plan and not get in their way on their side of the hill. Summit County doesn't have much to do with it. We have some conversations with UDOT about it and obviously the adjacent property owners. Twisted Branch Road creates two lots, one which would be an on-mountain restaurant that's allowed under the development agreement, and then one would be the transfer of the fire station site and our water tank site back to us. So there are some other moving parts inside of this thing that we're trying to make sure that we're dotting the I's and crossing the T. This is a 25-year planning decision that we're trying to make now, looking 25 years out.
Bruce, I have one more quick question for you. The last thing, at the last Planning Commission meeting, the commission spent a long time hearing from Deer Valley Resort on its short-term parking plan. And Steve Isowitz from Deer Valley brought up pretty briefly that this will all change once the Deer Valley Resort base is developed. When are we expecting to hear from Deer Valley on that?
Fairly soon, I would expect, probably before January. They are in a due diligence, trying to understand what the land management code says. They have some vested rights on that parking lot, so they have some right to develop, just the same as Park City Mountain Resort has. I think the planning staff, as we get geared up to have this conversation, are going to want to try and make sure that certain things are happening consistent with the City Council goals. And that is, we got to make transit work at both resorts. We got to make sure parking works at both resorts. We got to make sure walking and connectivity work at both resorts inside the vested rights that both of them have.
All right, Bruce, I think we have to leave it there.
Thanks.
Thanks so much. The Park City Newcomers Club is hosting its annual luncheon in just a few weeks with guest speaker Bill White. And joining us with details are co-presidents Araby Leary and Carol Hazelton. Good morning.
Good morning. How are
Good
you?
Good morning.
Very well, thank you. It's great to meet you because I'm actually a newcomer to Park City. Maybe you can kind of explain what the purpose of your club is.
Well, initially in 1995, it was formed to help new people like you. So you're a target.
Oh. Glad we made the connection.
And a good one. Since that time, for instance, I came here 3 years ago, and at my first meeting, I met people, and I said, oh, how long have you been in Park City? And said, 18 years, 20 years. I said, oh, so, we joined, and then we stayed because of all the activities, all the fun, and the camaraderie. And it's not just for new people.
Right. We have a lot of longtime residents here. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your membership. What are their stories? How long have they been here?
Well, Carol has an interesting story,
sure.
too.
Well, I first moved to Park City in 1972, and I was here for 20 years, and then I left. And I was gone for about 25, 26 years, And my children stayed here, and all of a sudden there was the birth of a grandson, and that pulled me back. And that's indicative of many of our members who come here because they're grandparents.
Right.
And their kids are here, and then all of a sudden the grandkids start coming, and we have a whole lot of grandparents in our organization.
Kind of re-experiencing Park City.
Right.
A lot of them, right. And then others, of course, came here to ski, and then they discovered the summer. And then they came back to stay. So it's a variety of ages, a lot of part-time, a lot of full-time people, couples, singles, everybody. It all works out.
Well, tell us about your luncheon on September 11th. You chose restaurant owner Bill White as the speaker. Why did you choose him?
Well, we've been trying to get Bill for at least 4 years to be our speaker, and there were always conflicts or he was unavailable. And this year, the time slot fit, and he said he would speak, and so we're delighted. And
I saw him at a Green Drinks several years ago, I guess, and I was enthralled and thought he would be a great candidate. So we're really lucky to get him.
What do you hope people get out of his talk?
Well, he has an agenda to tell his story and his journey and where he's been and, of course, all of his restaurants. But right now he's into sustainability and education on agriculture, has ranches and farms, and he's getting more into that. And I think that will be his message. But the other part of the luncheon is a kind of a thank you to all of our members. We have about 350 members, and many of them will come. And to show the activities that are available. We have about 25 different activities every month that we do, different like little clubs within the club. And
so this brings everyone together in one place.
Exactly. So there will be an hour to socialize and to look at the displays that the activity chairs will have, and new people can come and see those too. And then we have our lovely lunch from Deer Valley, and then Bill White. And what could be better?
What's on the menu?
Oh, what's on the menu? Let's see, it's a pasta with a couple of sauces, a galette of mushroom, several salads, and dessert, and your mouth is watering.
Yeah, I haven't had breakfast yet.
And we have a signature cocktail as well.
Yeah, there's a cash bar.
Right,
with the cash for socializing.
Bar. Of course. Well, Araby and Carol, why don't you give us the details so people know how they can attend, when they can attend, that sort of thing.
Sure. Tickets are available for $45 right now for members, $55 for non-members, so that's always an incentive to join. And until September 4th, price, the $45, is in effect. All you have to do is go to parkcitynewcomers.org. All the information is there. You can purchase the ticket online. And also, if you'd rather send a check, that information is there, too. So the website is the way to get the ticket.
That's the place. Is there anything else you want to add about upcoming events for this month or the next month?
We have every month. One thing Araby forgot to mention was every month we have a coffee. It's held at the Park City Community Church. And it's open to anyone who'd like to come. We do a little bit of a breakfast, a light brunch, and a social hour for about an hour. And then we do have a speaker that's not Bill White at this time. We do different speakers.
Sometimes nonprofits,
right,
in
nonprofits.
Local areas, so you can find out places to volunteer, right?
Right, and we have interesting speakers that are local. We had Feldman's Deli, a local geologist, the Harlows, Beethoven Society, Better Days 2020. So it's always something that's very interesting for our members.
Probably a good way to get their feet wet in the club.
Exactly. Right. Second Wednesday of every month.
Okay, and the luncheon is September 11th. Araby Leary and Carol Hazelton from the Park City Newcomers Club, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you
for
having us.
It's our pleasure.
In September, the Pure Midway Land Preservation Group will host what it hopes becomes an annual tradition. Joining us by phone to talk about the Volks March on September 21st are Pure Midway board members Katie Noble and Chris Ward. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having us.
Hi, is this Katie or Chris?
This is Katie.
Hi, Katie. Well, there are groups like Summit Land Conservancy and Utah Open Lands that work to preserve open space. Maybe you can briefly tell us about the mission of Pure Midway.
Sure. The mission of Pure Midway is to preserve the rural character of Midway and also the North Fields, and we hope to expand eventually into the county. We started about 3 years ago. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and nobody was doing Utah Open Lands was doing some work over in Wasatch County, and we just decided that we needed a little more of a presence in Midway and in the county because of the growth pressures that are happening here.
Yeah, and something your organization advocates for is smart growth. What does that look like for Midway?
So for Midway, smart growth looks like what it should look like in any other city or small town. It means that you would have walkability, trails, density kind of clustered toward downtown. And then as you expand beyond town and get farther out, the density starts to get smaller or the density starts to decrease. So that basically you have residents sort of packed in areas where you're downtown, you can walk, you can have a vibrant main street. And then as you move away from that main street area, acreage starts to get larger. You get better view sheds. You get larger lots, et cetera.
So preventing sprawl, as we like to call it.
Exactly. Managing sprawl in a way that works well for humans and wildlife and animals, livestock.
Well, talk about your event on September 21st. What is a Volks March?
So this is Chris Ward.
Hi,
and a Volks March is a European-style walk where people come together in communities to walk city to city, trail to trail. They actually get awards for completing those trails. So we are trying to revive the European history here in Midway by creating this Volks March to preserve space.
Give us the details on the event. Starts at 8:30?
So the event will be on the 21st of September, starting at 9 o'clock. We encourage people to come a little earlier for registration if they can. There's a 5K and a 10K walk that'll go through historic Midway up to Memorial Hill and back. We have a fun end of event where we'll have lots of activities, games, and food. But the most important feature will be the educational piece, where we will have different groups, conservancy groups there with booths to give people options of what they can do with their lands.
It also looks like you'll be honoring someone during the event. Who is that?
We will. We have chosen Robert Duncan, who is a local Midway artist. He's been here for many, many years. He has been a proponent of open space for many years. And his paintings have captured the essence of Midway's rural beauty that we're trying to save. So we're very, very happy to have him with us this year to honor his work.
So you're kind of hoping to turn this into an annual event. Why do you think it's beneficial to bring the community together in this way?
Well, we want to do two things. There are two goals. We want to preserve ground, but we also want to create common ground for the community to come together. Whether you've lived here for 50 years or 5 years, everyone that's here loves and appreciates the rural beauty of Midway. We want people to come with a purpose of getting engaged with the rich history that is here, and get engaged with ways that they can help preserve that for years to come for other generations. At the rate growth is going here in Midway right now, there may not be a whole lot of that left unless we consciously make an effort to do that.
And let's talk about one of those efforts, because Pure Midway advocated for the $5 million open space bond that Midway voters passed last November. What's the latest on how that bond will be used?
So the Open Space Committee in Midway and Wasatch County is making determinations with respect to that money in conjunction with Utah Open Lands and Summit Land Conservancy. The latest is that they've chosen at least one project that's going to be a fantastic project. Unfortunately, we can't identify which one it is. And then they're looking to identify a couple of more projects at this point. I think they're in the process.
I know you can't identify what the project is, but is there any project that Pure Midway would be particularly excited about?
We're excited about any project that preserves open space. the project that they've identified, we think, is going to be a game changer for the Valley. We're just very enthusiastic about it.
Is there anything else you want to add about the Volksmarch? Will there be food and dancing? And I don't know. I've never been to a Volksmarch before.
Yes. So there will be food. There will be entertainment at the end. It's just going to be a fun, family-oriented event, again, to educate folks as to the uniqueness of Midway. There are so many unique features here between the geothermal features, the rural, the farms. We want people to really understand that this, once it's gone, it's gone. We really want them to come and enjoy it and want to preserve it for many, many years to come. So lots of fun events. We're going to have a walk wall. We'll have bouncy houses for the kids. We'll have food trucks. So it'll be a good time for families to come.
We're going to have a DJ who will be playing some fun, like, polka music and pop music. And so we hope they'll be dancing. We encourage people to wear their European attire with lederhosen or dirndl dresses if they choose. Bring your walking sticks, or you can buy them online on our website. And one thing that's kind of fun with the Volksmarch is every year that you do it, you get something called a Stucknagel, which is a little medallion that is unique to the year of the event. And you can put it on your walking stick and start a tradition collecting the Stucknagels.
Oh,
yeah,
I
try
see.
Saying that three times.
Yeah, sounds like a very cultural event. Well, that's September 21st. And Katie Noble and Chris Ward from Pure Midway, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. For more information, you can visit puremidway.org.
Got
it. Thank you.